bug tales in the night. Extreme vibration, unexpected strikes. Blades make a motion, we'll be hooking skis before the night is through.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, a Jay Bird.
Steve, what's going down in Canada? Talk to me.
The dream. It is.
Are you?
No. It is pain. I call this the pain train, to be honest with you. So,
no pain, no gain.
No, if you want to know what it's like, you know, you're up at 5:30, bed at 12. It's just the pain train. So, right now, setting out a pretty heavy duty wind blowing. Right now, yeah. I talked to Herbie on the phone about an hour ago, right? I said, okay. What's it like over where you're at? And he said, it's like a woman of ill repute on dollar day, Jay. That's, he didn't phrase it that way. But
okay.
Put it together yourselves in your own Herbieism there. He just let her rip. It is blowing something awful right now. It
sounds like you had a big cold front go through, and now you're feeling the effects.
Well, that's the thing, though, with all things, what's amazing, you can whine and cry and complain about postfrontal conditions, but what you get before that is what matters, you know,
the payoff, and so, right.
You know, and it's that cycle. I think last week I might've touched on it or whatever, because, you know, when I'm up here, it's always kind of like in the moment or what's going on and, you know, living it, breathing it, eating it, sleeping it, you know. Trying to not fall asleep at the dinner table. That was my deal last night. Like, you're keeling over. But
well, think about how close you are. Just, I mean, the sheer fact that you're that close to two different Herbex at the same time.
That's dicey. If you think being around Smitty's is bad, you might.
It's just I was going there. Exactly.
You might find yourself in a worse predicament being around two Herbex.
I bet you guys bounce off some ideas with each other. I mean, that's pretty cool.
No. let's put it this way. It's what did you do, right, with very, very vague sharing of ideas. We're all freaking. No, but, you know, we're all friends, but we're also just fighting each other at all times. So, well, it is what it is. It's all friendly and fun. I love Steve and Danny. They're both great. But, you know, I'm not going to tell them exactly what I'm doing. I don't think they're going to do the same, you know. But we're always catching up and all that stuff. But with that being said, the taking advantage of those prefrontal conditions. And kind of like if you look at like a week like this where I'm fishing with Bob and, you know, if you think you're going to have lights out fishing for 7 days on your big Canada trip, or it could be your Wisconsin trip or whatever, this is the reading the weather, right? We talk about it all the time where looking at the weather, reading the weather, knowing when to take your shot, when to not take a shot, when to be there, when to not. Because, you know, Bob and I at breakfast were going over like, quite a bit of discussion over what I'd say, like the resource allocation, right? So time, I talk about in the new book, Muskie IQ, and I'm saying that the number one resource, the most finite resource you have on the boat is time, right? That's just a fact. That's the number one thing that you have the least of, right? And kind of one of the more interesting things that we were hitting on and really pummeling here, and I'm turning on Jay, believe it or not, I might lose you for a moment, turning on the Toyota 4Runner Studios here real quick because it's about to suffocate in this truck, but
drop the heat probably, it's so cold up there, huh? I'll
just open the freaking window, I'm dying here. Tire pressure's down, Jay.
Well, if it's not one thing, it's another up there. They got free air up there in Canada? Hello. What was
hello.
That?
Hello. I still got you. That was
hi. Okay.
5x5. That was the truck. But tire pressure's down. Expectations are low. But
okay.
what I'm to the point here is you have a finite amount of time, right? When are we going to allocate said time and try to line up with those bite windows?
Mm-hmm.
That's the game. Because, you know, past, you know, in my 40s, a 10, 12-hour day is just a beating, right? It's the beating of the week, right? I just went through it yesterday. It was the beating of the week. Where in these prefrontal conditions, making sure you're where you need to be, when you need to be there. And yesterday morning was lights out to the point of pulling off on 40-inch fish and going, no, we don't have time. Right? There comes one and 40-41. No, moving on.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? I'm serious. I mean, it's a different
that hot scenario. And heavy. That's what you're up for.
Not gonna do it in Wisconsin anytime soon. Right? But you know, we were laughing last night. Here comes a fired up 37. Let's just pull that out of the water real quick and move on. Right? Because the reality of the matter is when you're in a bite window and it happens, you got an hour, hour and a half max, right? To make something happen that's meaningful. Yesterday was the perfect exemplification of identify the bite window and then have immediate pivots.
Immediate, what was that?
Pivots. Being able to pivot to something else structurally or complex-wise that checks the same boxes, right? And it's funny, you know, where you know, every day or every trip or however you want to look at it, learning something else or executing something. And yesterday was kind of that perfect kind of storm of, all right, this is what we got into. This is where they're at. How many do I know in my immediate area? Right? And to the extent of multiple fish, you know, hitting the bag and then multiple fish that were just not worthy of the steal are set up there. And then that's when that run and gun happened where I even discussed last night with Bob and going, should we have run and gunned harder? Right? Do you fish out things thoroughly? But when you're dialed and you go, okay, they're using X, Y, and Z, they're on this kind of cover, it's whatever it is, right? Whether it be a weed rock combo, whether it be wind blown, you know, here's the neck down thing, here's this, here's that. The second you identify that, how many things in your immediate area do you have to pivot to? Right? We talked about last week and I was just going whole hog on understanding structure from those different angles, right? And then this bite window yesterday just turned into, you better know where to go when it's happening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how many times have we talked about, because under the normal situation of a normal musky angler, you're not taking month-long trips, you're taking... Right. 4-day trips, maybe, if you're lucky, you know, a long weekend sometimes. And it's like, you don't have the luxury of experiencing great weather patterns. No. So you're at the mercy of tough fishing. And so what do we, you know, quite often we're going to talk about, you know, how to score on less than ideal conditions. But this is interesting because now you're like, yeah, I like this. You know, what to do, taking full advantage of.
When it's hot.
And when it's hot and you're talking about pivoting, but yeah, I like to hear this. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you hit a bite. If you're on a body of water that's moderate pressure to no pressure and there's giants swimming around, it's time to go. You know, this is not low density fishing. This is a different headspace where, you know, you're not so concerned that Johnny Bucktail just went through it. Right.
True.
And you're not too concerned that you know, that they've been caught seven times this year. So different headset, you know, but I think the same could be true, though, like where let's say that fish are coming hot and heavy or there's a dominant bite window, right? Or even that bite. And it's the one thing I'd say goes anywhere. If when you get a bite, you got that eat and that fish is in the net, the next question is, what are we doing next? Right.
I would assume so.
Right. Because
if you've identified it as a hot bite, you know, clearly, right. You need a little bit of feedback to at least base that decision.
Well,
looking at conditions too, but it's just like, how long do you stay in the spot if you just saw 235 inchers come up, you know?
Well, and to the same extent last week, you know, I'm just living in the moment. And last week was, how do you pattern with no feedback?
With no feedback, yeah.
And still score.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This week is, here they come screaming like monkeys. Where are the bigger ones? And how do I get there and get in front of them during that narrow bite window?
No doubt, right?
Right. Which is week to week. I mean, and it's, you know, you have cyclical weather. It's generally, I mean, I'm looking at Thursday going, well, that's when we're going to catch a fish. You know, I'm going to try to pull off some cold front Steve Awesome here after a bit, right? And see, let's test that. All right. And see what happens. How severe is the front? What is the effect of the front? And what are they going to do? But, you know, I'm riding the pine a little bit today, to be honest with you, letting it settle down. I really don't want to go have to get my teeth repaired after, you know, riding around the lake in rollers from hell. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, recoup a little bit. And it's that time allocation of, I know that in a cycle of this, in a 3-day cycle, I know that today's crap, tomorrow will be better and Thursday will be great. Right. So even on a trip of going, cool, I woke up, it's the most sleep I've had in 2 weeks, right? Got up, went to breakfast, went to town, and then we're doing the podcast. Yesterday, you couldn't pry me off that boat, Jay, to save your life.
Yeah, you know, we didn't pod yesterday.
Right.
Yeah, you're like, sorry, things are happening.
Sorry,
it's a good scenario right now.
I have nothing. Listen, either I'm out here, I have awesome stories to tell, your choice. But understanding that, I think, is imperative when you're taking a trip, whether it be, like you said, that weekend trip, or heck, you know, we talk about it all the time because I'm, you know, it's right now and you're in the heat of it. It's more actionable over the winter. It's more theoretical, right? And we're discussing theoretical stuff quite a bit. And you're going, look at the weather, look at, plan it out. What happened before you got there, right? And taking those kind of, not rules, but taking these loose parameters. Where are we at in the cold front? I think the same plays when you're here and go, all right, is today the day I head out at sunset and just beat my brains in 3-foot rollers all day? So tomorrow I'm just absolutely trashed. You know, and they're stubborn and they're stupid. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, are you going to be out there doing that, playing Captain Ahab, or do you kind of pick your punches? Again, it's that resource management of, you have time. You only have so much time on a destination, but you have quality, competent fishing versus dragging a sack. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're dragging. Like, if you go out and you just spend 12 hours and just getting beat, you've diminished your physical capabilities.
Yeah, after 24/7 grinds, you want your body to be fresh, your body and your mind. I mean it's
right.
Sounds stupid.
It's mental. It's like I said, the mental is important as hell, though.
No,
for what
sure.
You're saying, which is, come back, get refocused and identify. It's like, what got us off the water yesterday? And you know, Bob and I have been playing directional games, right? Okay, which way's north? What's that? What's this? What's that? What's this? Right? Because I'd rather pattern one and catch one than just go catch one, right? The patterning is what floats the boat currently. And
okay,
well, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you see enough of them, it's like that chess game of going, where are you gonna be, you monkey? And there he is, mm-hmm. Right? and trying to be more spot on spot or more predictive, right? And that's what excites me at this point, of being able to say, there'll be one here, here, and here. And then we go, and there's one here, here, and here. And then the next day you go, there'll be one here, here, and here. And you go, oh, okay, whatever. How many times am I right on that front, right? But, you know, looking at the direction of the wind and all this stuff. But what I'm getting at is, he and I kind of looked at each other, and you felt that north wind hit.
Oh, I know what direction that's from. It hit you in the back and then it got real cold, right? And he went, front's here. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
When it
sure.
hits, but back to the crux of it, the resource management aspect, right? Which is your time allocation, right? And then you could allocate what you know that is what do you know is productive, right? What do you know on that body of water? It's your Friday after work trip, right? You're going out with your son, or you're, you know, down to the local Muskie Lake, or you're going on a trip. It doesn't matter. It's all the same, right? I treat it the same at home as I do here. How do I ensure that I am performing top notch physically and mentally during the time period that the window of activity should take place? Right. And mm-hmm. patterning is that, and I'm saying the next level of the patterning is that, because you just talk about talking to Herbie. He and I talk about all the time with guests, right? You know, you get somebody in your boat. The spirit is willing, but the body is unable, or however people say it, right? Most people are gassed after 4 to 5 hours. That's kind of when you start losing the thread, right? Four and a half hours guiding, you know, at home, you can see it. You see the change, you see that they're getting lazy with everything. So it's kind of important to consider like what your own level of giving a crap is too, right? Mm-hmm. We all want to, but like at hour six, are you as sharp as you were at hour two?
Well, for sure. I mean, you got heat, you got wind, you mm-hmm. got just the sheer hours of right. casting and presenting baits correctly. I mean, that right. takes energy, you know,
and
million things you got to right. do to sustain that.
Right. How are your legs?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you got good boats
rocking all day. Yeah. If you were to go out today, like you said, I mean, that would truly be a physical exertion. You'd be shot the next day. It's like, okay, let's fish the rest of the day in this 30+ mile an hour wind, you know, causing just almost dangerous wave conditions. I mean,
right.
So you're always bracing for that, your back, your legs.
And then to the dynamic of this, I know where a big fish is right now, right? And it's gonna get caught. It's on the list here, right?
Okay.
The environmental conditions are slanted against me that I'm more apt to make a mistake. Right? If it's blowing 20, how clean's my figure eight gonna be? Am I going to have speed and depth control in that? Am I going to have precision boat control? Am I more likely to screw it up? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay.
And that's a consideration too of like how you, like, again, it's that allocation of, yeah, I'm itching to get there, but do you go back on a big fish when it's blowing, or how, you know what I'm saying? It's just one more thing to consider.
Do I run the risk of, you know, blowing
sore mouth in it?
Yeah, right.
Do I got in sore mouth?
That's what you call it. Yeah.
Do I got here and sore mouth this fish because I had a lousy eight because the trolling motor's coming out of the water, right?
I'm visualizing this as you go.
Yep. Oh, for some of the muskie shot.
I hate that.
Well, for some of the muskie shot videos that will be coming out this winter and stuff, I saved a clip, Jay, of that. I mean, just banging. You know what I'm saying? It's just like talking to Bob was laughing. He was like, talk about boat control. And I'm sitting here, I'm holding him over a point you visually can't see. Just got it dimed. Right. And I haven't made a cast in probably 7 minutes because I can't. You know what I'm saying? I'm out there.
Sheer boat maintenance. Right. Yeah. Sheer, don't want to run up into the rocks. Want to keep it in the right spot so you can fish effectively.
Right.
We're getting rocked. The thing's coming out of the water. Everything's just at volume 10 because of the wind.
Yeah, which is like, if I made a cast, I'm just I told him flatly, if I make a cast, it's just going to be a crap. You know what I'm saying? Mm. But it's also just a consideration of, like I said, picking your punch, That'd be the whole crux of what I'm getting at is pick your shot. And it's like, if you pick it right and you go, okay, this is when we're going, and it doesn't have to be sunrise. It doesn't have to be sunset. When are the factors lining up? Right. And so is it a matter of grind? Is it grinding or is it efficiency? Right. Well, Jay, we just had a shocking twist. We had a drop call, international call, right? Wow.
Right. Canadian airdrop. That's what they call it. Canadian airdrop.
There. But anyway, what I was getting at is just considering that factor, I think is important. Considering that time is your most finite resource on the water. How does physicality play on time? Is it meaningful time? Is it well fished time? Right. You know, Tom Gelb used to say there's intelligent time on the water and there's time on the water and things of that nature, right? Which yeah. is a strong thought, but it's also too what level are you fishing when it matters? And then again, back to the structural thought process, categorization and understanding and being, okay, we just caught one off of Lenny's weed bed, Jay, right? Let's take it to the most baseline. You pull up to Central Wisconsin Lake, right? Or Northwoods Wisconsin Lake, and you catch one off the weeds, and you're paying enough attention to go, hey, we caught this fish. The boat was in 10 and we threw it to weeds and we got him on a booker tail. That's never happened, has it, Jay? I don't believe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Happens every day, multiple times sure. a day. So having enough lake knowledge of that trip to go, hey, where's the next weed bed that has 10, 12 feet adjacent to it?
Yeah, yeah.
That will change the dynamic of how many fish you're catching immediately. Like from that baseline, if you're new to the sport, or, you know, I always say everybody's at a different place in their musky journey, right? So if you're looking for musky number one, or you're looking for musky number five, you're looking for musky number 50, and that's where we're at on the patterning front of before you hit that lake, identifying whether it be Google Maps, looking at here's the satellite image. Oh, those are dark patches over there. Now you go back and structurally look at your map and go, okay, there's two weed beds on that lake that have similar characteristics. That's strong. That's a much more analytical approach, or a much stronger mental approach than just going out there and looking for the weeds. Because that pivot I was discussing, Jay, of okay, let's say you go out to this theoretical lake and Johnson's weed bed gives you your biggest 37 you ever caught. You fish that out. Okay, where do we go next? Oh, you know, you're aware of that similar weed bed with the similar structural elements in play. Bam, you might get everything, get two in a day.
The replicate positive.
Replicate positive. Perfectly put. Okay, you know, I'm not great at paraphrasing much, but that's perfectly put, Jake. Why are we not replicating positive?
Why are we not trying? Why are we not thinking about it? Hey, we just got one. They're turning on. Let's keep fishing this weed line.
Right, got them. Yeah, fish yep. it out. What do we do now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's wish I would have had that in the new book. That's a great line. Replicate positive. Why? That's the whole crux of structure fishing, right? That's the whole crux of all of this is the ability to, like you said, replicate positive results. Okay, so if I do this and this happens, right? So I have this bait on at this speed, throwing at this cover and structure, this happens. Right.
Yeah.
I need to go to similar scenarios. And then the further you get down the rabbit hole is like last week, we were talking directional influence and all this stuff, but perfectly put, we are way behind. And I say way behind, I mean, shockingly behind on Q&A. So we'll get a couple of these here, folks. I apologize. What do we got here? Jeff, I was listening to the podcast. You guys were talking about musky jigging. And have questions on leaders for a vertical jig setup. What leaders are you using and why? Thanks for sharing the knowledge. Can't get enough of the podcast. Thank you, Jeff. Vertical jigging leaders. I will tell you flatly, when it comes to a vertical jigging setup, it's not like a preference between any leaders. I'm going to avoid fluoro though. Right. So a straight wire leader, I think, is more than sufficient, or a multi-strand wire leader, more than sufficient. The strikes are such, they're just violent, right? And they're generally a headshot. I'm going to avoid fluorocarbon because there's a possibility of a bite off in that scenario, right? The only times I'm really, really apprehensive about fluorocarbon are krakens, like krakens and tubes and vertical jigging. Because you know it's gone for the head of that bait. You know there's a lot of things that can go wrong. More so than anything on a vertical jigging setup, I'm avoiding a snap.
Yeah, you're right.
All right.
Because solid ring connection, something of that
solid
nature.
Use a split ring connection. You know, I mean, you could go as far as just building straight wire onto like a Bondi bait. You know, you can haywire twist around that thing or do a split ring. I don't recommend tubes and I don't recommend vertical jigs with a snap. If you take, say, like a standard snap, and if you look at the way that bait's falling, and this is the problem with tubes and vertical jigs with snaps, they hit it on the drop. We can agree, right? I mean, on a vertical jig, you'll get some on the lift up, but let's, for the overall, you're going to get most of your hits on the drop, right? With that being said, where's that leader? Think about it in your head where that leader is. Where's that snap? It's laid against the head of the bait. So now when Mr. Muskie hits it, there's a possibility of that fish hitting that thing and popping the snap open because he hit it hard. Right. It's because
yeah,
snap.
That's true. Yeah. Because yeah, the snap can also bind, you know, could lay at a different angle and there could be a little binding, which would not let the bait swing as freely and, you know, look good in the water. So yeah, I mean, I agree. Yeah. If you can use some kind of split ring setup on your end connection there on leader,
that's the only time I'm really sitting here going, we got it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, consider that just do a split ring to the attachment there and, solid wire. I mean, if for me with vertical jigging, I'm looking for 12 inch multi-strand 130 AFW. You know, I think it's 130, it might be 120, whatever. The black coated stuff, Jay. That's what I run on a vertical jig. So,
gotcha. Okay,
keep it easy. I do like a swivel at the top of that, I crimp them up myself, just a big, heavy AFW swivel at the top. Just for the sheer violence of the endeavor. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, a lot of times when they hit off that bottom, it's swinging and winging. So Kyle went out last week and had a decent fish come in hot on a Suic. I've got some good experience with Suics and diving rod style lures, but never had one fall screaming hot. Is there any tricks to convert a hot fish on diving rods? I was struggling pretty hard with that fish that fast. Normally the fish that come in on my Suic are lazy, hang back. Love the cast. Thanks, Kyle. So, diving rods. Never caught one on diving rods, Jay. Not my style.
Haha.
I'm teasing. One of my faves.
I hear that.
What I'm getting at, sometimes I know exactly what I'm saying, because a lot of times with diving rods, you're like really blotting through things. You're like, yeah, I hit that weed. Ooh, I hit that, right? And you'll get that pant shitter coming in, and he's just, that's kind of my divergence from a Suic, and one of the reasons why. Bob and I were talking yesterday. Give me a tightener, a bobby bait, right? I like bobby baits. You know, we have I was throwing yesterday the 12 inch bobby, Jay, right? Just a monster bait.
Yeah.
But tightens and bobbies have some swing to them that you can use to your advantage on hot fish. Whereas a Suic gets very anemic on hot fish. That's the one thing. So if I'm in that scenario, if I'm just in a general, I need to be throwing diving rods, that's my, there's nothing wrong with a Suic. Don't not knocking them, but you're hamstrung on hot fish or what you can do. Tighten, straight retrieve it, and just straight retrieve it. You'll get wobble walk and you at least got the tail doing something there, right? And I treat it like a minnow bait. And I'm just real, like yeah. Chuggy, real, right? Straight reel at Chuggy. If he comes in smoking on it and catch him, Bobby bait, you can get the same. And that's what I like about these baits, because you're not left with no option, right? So go to like a straight retrieve on that, and you can like real stop. I mean, when I say stoppage, I'm talking like real kind of short insta stops, right? Just enough to make that bait kick up just for a second. And that's what I'm going to look for on Dive and Rise. And that, let me go.
Well, I think with baits that don't have really strong attributes of being great figure eighters, something you can do is, is speed and depth, at the boat and get that rod almost halfway down into the water and keep that thing the same kind of motion, but more amplified.
Yeah,
and that can be a good trigger too.
Yeah, you just gotta give them hell. Yeah. I mean, you gotta give it a bunch. Tim from Canada says, just bought a second trolling setup. One to spool it with wire. Not much info online. Was wondering the ins and outs of wire trolling. Pound test, stainless steel, multi spran, reliable brands. The older I get, the more I troll. Ain't that the truth, Jack? The older I get, the more I troll, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I can tell you what the 20-year-olds are doing, out there just a scoping their little hearts out. You're 40, you do a little bit. You do a little scoping. You do a little casting. You do a little trolling. I hit 60, buddy. I ain't casting a rod ever again, Jay. Not happening.
You think so? Okay.
I hope not. Anyway, I'm just going to step there.
I hope not.
Step there. I won't jerk troll. If they ain't hitting a straight slammer fatty minnow at 4 miles an hour, I'm not, they ain't catching one.
Okay.
Just sit there eating my sandwich. Wire trolling is a lost art. That's why you're having trouble finding information about it. So it's one of those deals of trolling with wire. You need a fiberglass rod, right? Just, you got to have something with give, right? Another thing I can tell you about wire trolling, never take the clicker off. The second you take a clicker off of a wire trolling reel, that wire jumps, right? You're always under tension. I have my dad's old wire trolling rods in my garage where they belong, right?
They belong in the garage?
They belong in the garage, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for catching that.
I've
done it. It's... So, if you've never trolled wire, which a lot of guys probably haven't.
I have not, yeah.
The game of trolling wire was to achieve depth.
Sure.
Right. So the benefits of wire trolling are achieving depth without a tremendous amount of line out, being mono. Right. So braided line runs shallower than mono. So the hierarchy is braided shallower because it floats. Mono, right. And as certain things, say you got up to 30 pound trilene, Jay, we got up to too high of a diameter and therefore it took more mono. Right. If you're getting into wire trolling, consider, are you doing it to achieve depth and is it necessary first and foremost? Right. Are you targeting really, really deep water? That might be a consideration. Right. Don't go and say, I'm going to troll wire for the sake of saying I'm going to troll wire, because it's a complicating factor. But if you need to get small baits deep, right, or you're trying to, the dynamic of hell is in the first book. My consideration with trolling presentations is the dynamic between how much boat control do I have versus their running depth, right? So line length, lure selection is dictated by how much line do I have out and how well am I able to articulate those presentations with the boat, because the boat catches the fish. The boat creates the directional changes and things of that nature. Right. So the dynamic of wire trolling, are you doing it to say you're doing it, or do you have a plan and say, I'm trolling this lake, I need to get small baits down deep, therefore I'm doing this. Right. That's the only reason I would tackle the dynamics of that. You know, you can, I mean, you can literally run straight wire, Jay. You know, it's just an attachment. My apprehension about that anymore is you run into scenarios where you're dealing with straight wire, you're dealing with even lead corn, things of that nature. They're not worth the headache anymore.
I just don't see a big advantage on that. I mean, it's not something you can just add weight to your presentation. I mean, this day and age with all the different gizmos we could attach and how we mod something, you know.
I'm not
interested in trying it.
Yeah, if you're dead set on it, there's a certain hum that comes off that line, by the way.
That's true.
There's a hum that comes off the wire line. And you know, if you're fishing somewhere where sound's impactful, where you go, man, you know, and A, be it, to be honest with you, I would, you know, set up one setup, get you 80-pound wire, single strand, right? Once you get it on that spool, you keep that sucker under tension the whole time. There's a special tip for wire rods. I can't remember the name of it. It's like a spring. I cannot for the life of me. I've been trying to think in the back of my head, trying to remember the name.
Roller tip?
Yeah, not a roller tip. It's like it looks like an egg whisk. You know, it's a springy kind of weird tip. Nonetheless.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, that's to help you with impact. Never try to troll wire or a non-stretch material, because braid is non-stretch, but it has, not to go down the rabbit hole too much, it's woven, as we all know, right? Which it, over distance, there's a little bit of give. Wire is freaking, there is no give at all. There's zero give, right? So right.
Yeah, that's what Robert Shaw, that's his original setup. He always ran that.
We always ran that on Joel's, but yeah, just consider it. I'd be rocking a glass rod, you know, like one of the St. Croix trolling rods or whatever. You could use anything, you know, a TRD or whatever you got your hands on, but you need to have give, and you need to have give at the, on the drag at the spool. It's kind of like you're running like the way you would set your drag on mono versus the way you set your drag on braid. Trolling wire, it's a different feel too, so you can't be overly tight, and it's again, I would recommend not doing it unless you know, heck, you know, there's guys on this body of water, they're catching them, and they're only catching them on the wire rod, right? The wire rod's the hot rod. That's the only time I'd ever consider it now, because like you said, Jay, you get yourself a power lock from Supernatural and throw a spinner bait down at 20 feet if you want.
There you go.
You know, so anyway, now, Jay, it's got me thinking about all the time to troll wire, and I got in trouble for taking the clicker off. Right? You know, you're sitting here going, oh, man, that didn't go well. Why did you do that?
Well,
you know. Anyway, Trevor, Stephen Jay, longtime listener of the podcast. Meow. I fish a 1,000-acre deep clear lake in Chippewa County. It has great weeds and structure, little musky fishing pressure. I've boated a lot of 30 and 40-inch fish, 40 being the biggest. I cannot find a fish in the mid-40s. Fish minors, majors, early mornings, late nights. There were a few mid-40s caught during a tournament a few years back. I know you've talked about big fish primarily hanging out over deep water structure. I'll admit, I have not spent a lot of time on. My question is it genetics of fish where they stall out at 40? Which I primarily hear, or is every mid-40s fish hanging out over deep water structure? Okay, so it's Bob and I last night. There's a bell curve, Jay, right? So on one side of this bell curve, we have tiny fish. In the middle, we have what most of the fish are. On the other side, we have the biggest fish, right? So if a lake is known to produce a bunch of 40s, right? Ah, that lake's got a lot of 40s in it. There are smaller fish and there are bigger fish, but obviously you have on that peak of your bell curve, you have a lot of 40-inch fish, right? Now, there's fishing. He said there's not a lot of fishing pressure, but they've had tournaments. These fish are educated. They've been caught. Things you need to consider is those bigger fish probably do not want to compete with the bunch of 40s that are up there. All right. Quite often, and the best tip I can give you, or a really clean thing, is a lot of times the bigger fish in a system are a cast off of where you're catching the smaller fish.
Hmm.
Right? Oh, here they come up into, you know, Lenny's weed bed, and you're 100 feet out. How long's your cast, right? Are you hitting 80 feet, 100 feet? Okay. Back her off again. All right? And your cast should start hitting where your boat would be when you're catching smaller fish. Once again, difficult for a lot of people to do is backing off of covering structure, right? A lot of your really big fish, and heck, talking about a bunch yesterday, how many times do you see really big mongoloid level fish up in the slop, right? Versus how many times do you move them over a reef that tops out at 15 feet?
Yeah, well, night and day difference.
Night
yeah, for
and day
sure.
difference. How much pressure is that 15-foot deep reef seeing?
Yep, there you go.
Night and day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they use it, but they see more when they're there. They're older. If there's any musky fishing pressure at all, right, they were probably once a 40 that got caught and know a little bit better now, right? Because pressure's real. It matters. So doing things differently. So it's very difficult. It's something I'm doing while I'm up here, Jay. It is not the most fun to run away from 40-inch fish. It's not like, you know, I joke with Bob or this, that, and the other. You tell me when you need a 36. We'll go get mm-hmm. him. I've got the box of shit right there in the boat for him. Right? Tell me when you're ready. Because right now, kind of my rule of thumb, if it's not 10 inches or better, it ain't getting thrown. Right? It sucks. But again, what's a downsized presentation to a 53? Right? And if I'm here, I'm going to use my time in that way. Right? That's what I choose to do. I don't care about Dinker Doodle in the weeds. But with that being said, to this guy's thing, hey, he wants to get on that mid-40s fish. You're probably going to have to sacrifice that bite. And that's the balance of, you might run into him up in the shallow stuff once or twice, or can you reconceptualize how you're fishing? And that's the dynamic of, like, you know, right now, I'm my own internal conversations or conversation with Bob or whatever, when I'm looking at it, I go, okay, how can I reinterpret what I'm doing to be more efficient? Am I fishing too? I mean, a question right now I have is during events when bite windows are happening, am I fishing areas too thoroughly? Am I wasting time? Right? Could I have turned, you know, a four fish day into an eight fish day by having the amount of time I fish something by being more accurate about spot on spot? You see what I'm saying? So the same dynamic applies for this young guy, where you go, okay, you're not getting the results that you desire. Are you waiting for the, and it's like parsing out the good, right? You're catching fish. You're ahead of the curve, right? Are you just catching okay fish? Are you catching the bell curve fish? You're fishing them. You're catching the majority. You need to back her off and think differently. Okay, so there's a minority of fish that are not showing up where the majority of the muskies are. How do I readdress and how do I reinvent how I'm approaching the lake? And quite often, you're sacrificing action. Like, that's the trade-off. That's the pure trade-off of, can you go 3 days without a bite?
It's a tough trade-off for most people, right?
I mean,
what am I doing wrong?
Because what am I doing wrong?
Second guessing yourself all day nothing. Long, you know, by the doing that. Yeah, but
which is
fish or deeper creatures.
Well, and generally more wary. Which is, you know, last week was the week from hell of no feedback. Which is, again, I didn't wake up one day and say, "Hey, I hate it. Oh, I hate every minute of it." Trust me, right? I should be catching one every third cast in my brain, right? I know better, but you just go trust the process. And that's a lot of it where it's difficult. Like, okay, do you want to catch one or do you want to get into it where, heck, I'm in real time, Jay, one could even say this. Okay, get in there and catch your 40 and then back her out. Then you know the bite window's there. But again, this goes back to what I said about understanding what's happening, understanding the structural nature of things, right? If you're uncomfortable with the deeper structure, get comfortable with it. The first, you go catch your 40 and then make that pivot. We were talking about pivots earlier. Make your next pivot to deeper things, right? Okay, got a little action. Now I'm going to pivot to deeper stuff and see if the big girls are on.
Yeah.
Right? And you can, that you could strike a balance there where you're not foregoing action, right? And you're catching some fish, but now you're targeting bigger fish because, again, there's different schools of the thought of, can you target big fish? I kind of flip-flop back and forth. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, right? Do you have to filter through a bunch of fish to get into big fish? But the one thing I tell you is this, if you're generally shallow, you're generally not into big fish, right? If you're generally fishing things that you can see the edge of, you're generally not going to find big fish, right? They have different tendencies, different habits, different patterns, and they want quicker access to deep water refuge, right?
Yeah.
So that would be it. So I get structural J. Before we drop that, because it just broke up again, before we drop another call, we're going to wrap her. I think we got a bunch there, but Jay, I'll send these over for you to put her together.
Okay. Sounds
all right,
good,
folks. Steve. See you next week. Later.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.